When I was a kid in church, we always had a question box tacked up out in the lobby. It was a church that was positive it had all the answers to all religious questions. So we solicited questions so we could prove that. And I was intrigued by that question box. I desperately wanted to get into it during the week to find out what somebody was asking so that before Sunday I could read up on the answer and know as much as the preacher did, or maybe even more. It impressed me that he had such good answers. It never occurred to me that perhaps he'd already gotten into the box himself and had a little running start. UCC does not have a question box, but from time to time someone does ask a question based on some remark made in a sermon, and sooner or later I try to respond to those. For example, someone said to me a few weeks ago, "You made a comment in last Sunday's sermon to the effect that the Bible requires flexibility and interpretive skills, especially when it gives what seems to be contradictory advice." And that isn't the kind of language I heard as a child, the speaker went on to say to me. "So could you give an example of what you meant?" Well, examples are not hard to find. We could come up with 100 of them if we had a semester of classroom hours together. But let me give just one which happens to be on my mind from something I was reading the other day. Take the matter to which Dusty introduced you of what the Bible says we are to do about our burdens. I don't have to establish the fact that we have them. I can look around this room, and from my hallowed knowledge of which ones of you wrestle with problems, I know something of our burdens, even in this small church. They're not exactly like the burdens borne in some churches. I mean, most of you have jobs. You do important work. You enjoy pleasant homes. You take vacation trips. But there are other kinds, and no one escapes some of those. A child breaks your heart. There is a long battle with disease, alcoholism, Alzheimer's, cancer, you know that long list. And if it isn't something that dramatic, then it's some personality trait that hurts your relationship with the rest of us. A quick temper, a tendency to be suspicious, a sense you can't shake off that your life is not secure, that no one really likes you, that you'll end your days alone and unloved. Oh, we could make quite a catalog and never leave this room. So what do we do with burdens? The Bible has 3 answers to that question, and they certainly do appear to be incompatible. One of them says, "Cast your burden upon the Lord." That sounds simple. Another makes us responsible for each other. "Bear one another's burdens." And still another, only a verse or two later, says, "All must carry their own burdens." So what are we to do? Give them over to God? Expect help from others? or carry our own. Each piece of scriptural advice has some element of truth, but each one is also partly misleading if we read it as literally as we read a roadmap. Let's talk for a moment about the one closest to home. Bear your own burdens. That seems fair enough. A kind of minimum requirement. But I can't even do that in the absolute sense because I'm simply too much involved with others in what I do. I can't bear the burden of my work, can't even perform it without your trust. I can't do it without your actual physical and mental help. John Donne's famous words are always true. No man is an island unto himself. Paul the Apostle overstates the case a little when he says we should test our own work so that our reason to boast will be in ourselves alone and not in our neighbor. Now, there is partial truth in that, but I must be careful not to read it as absolute. How can I rejoice in myself alone when I've scored a touchdown or preached a sermon or been elected governor? None of them has any meaning at all except for those other people who will cheer the run, listen to the words, or agree to be governed. And yet there is a sense in which we are to bear our own burdens, to find sufficiency in ourselves, and not to be dependent on others, even if that statement is nearly always overstated for effect. One version of this biblical verse says, carry your own pack. And that gets through to me because I've been on backpacking trips in the mountains when I would have rejoiced to put at least half my pack load on somebody else, or if I could figure out how to do it, on God. So I understand why the Apostle Paul gives this advice. He has seen the eternal human tendency to shift the load, pass the blame, call out too often for sympathy. And he knows how that stunts our growth. But there may have been another reason for him to say, bear your own burden. There are some burdens no one else can bear anyway. They might be glad to if they could, but the other person's burden is hidden in the heart, linked to things done a long time ago that cannot now be changed, tied to memories that no one else can be a part of in the way we have to be. Once, a long time ago, I wrote a man that his mother, from whom he had been deeply estranged, was ill, and that he might wish to come home, might wish to be reconciled. He did not respond. But in the final day of her life, the doctor sent word that she had only hours to live, and he made it with minutes to spare. His mother just barely had time to give him a quick, weak smile of welcome before she died. He stood there and looked at her, and at the marks of long, anguished worry in her face. And then he fell down by the bed and shook the whole room with his sobbing. I couldn't bear to look, and I couldn't bear the burden. It was his. No one else could know the weight of it or what it had cost the way he knew it. There is a sense in which every one of us must bear our burden quite alone. But as so often happens, the Bible doesn't have a detailed blueprint for every contingency. It assumes our use of a free intelligence. There's also a clear-cut statement in our faith that we are to bear one another's burdens. And so, to some degree at least, that must be possible as well. And because we always have so much more common sense than we have reading sense, we know exactly what that means. To be a friend when one is needed, to touch the shoulder, to say, "I'm here," to bring a casserole, to run an errand. Life simply would not be worth anything without supportive friends. And I have never found a better definition of a friend than the one you have probably all heard many times. That a true friend is one to whom you can tip out all the contents of your heart, chaff and grain together, knowing that the gentlest of hands will take and sift it. Keep what is worth keeping, and with the breath of kindness, blow the rest away. No friendship survives unless this is how we treat each other. There is always chaff, always dust, always something that has to be overlooked, forgiven in your life and mine. This is part of what it means to bear one another's burden. The unforgiving have no friends. And yet this too is only partially realizable. I can't ever completely bear the burden of someone else. I can't change the fact of the nursing home, or heal the broken hip, or take someone's place in a wheelchair. I can share those burdens a bit, but I can't take them over. So it is hyperbole, overstatement, Paul uses when he says, "I must." And it's common sense and interpretive skill I have to use to understand what he is really saying to me. Please remember the point of the sermon, that the Bible is a book that requires sensitive, wise ways of reading. Turn loose upon it a fanatic, a dogmatist, and it becomes one of the most dangerous and harmful books on the face of the earth. The Ayatollah Khomeini's insistence some years ago that somebody murder a man who had cast doubt on the perfection of Muhammad and the Quran came as no great surprise. It was the same fanatic's mentality that has so often cursed the earth in the name of religion. "I'm right, you're wrong, and I'll stop you from spreading your untruth by whatever means I can find, fair or foul." in his country, since he was head of both church and state, he could offer a reward for a murder. In this country, we have to use character assassination because the state looks unkindly upon murder. And I bring these things up because we are talking about how the Bible has to be interpreted, how that is not always easy, and therefore how generous we ought to be to those whose interpretations are not like our own. Now back to the first answer we read to the question of what to do with our burdens. I may lose someone here because it is so consoling to say, cast all your burdens upon the Lord and He will sustain you. But can we? It's beautiful. But how do we read it? How far is it a total and practical truth? I do not expect to bear any burden more grievous than Jesus did with the cross looming ahead of him. And so he looked to God for deliverance from that burden, if it could be. If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. It's so important that you realize he wasn't kidding. He was lonely and scared, wondering, is there any way out? And if he didn't mean that, if that was simply a charade said for some dogmatic reason, then I would lose all my regard for him. He didn't fake the sweat or the loneliness or the plea. If there is any way, take this burden away from me. He meant it. Now, I can believe he was given strength to bear what happened, but did his father bear it for him? Hardly. Not when sweat like huge drops of blood dripped from his face, not when the death he dreaded took place despite his prayers. So being a child of God in this troubled world is not as simple a matter as casting our burdens on somebody else, not even on God. The burdens are, after all, part of the discipline, part of the way it is. If religion were a matter of unburdening ourselves on some deity, we'd be emotional and intellectual cripples anyway, just as your child is if you do every single math and English problem and get her out of every jam and never let her bear her own burden. What I can believe about the verse that says, cast your burden on the Lord, is that the load I have to bear is made lighter when I can believe that God cares and that I am loved. I can hope the burden will pass, as it sometimes does. And if it does not pass, I can believe that somehow it will be turned into some good for me if I accept it with courage and grace. Paul taught us something about burdens. He had something that hurt, that apparently at times drove him wild, and so he called it a thorn. Sticking in his flesh or in his spirit, painfully. We have a hymn somewhere that says, labor is rest, and pain is sweet if thou, my God, art there. But you have to read that in a special way. It's partial truth, not absolute. It's a paradox that requires some adjustment. Paul didn't think his pain was sweet. And so he prayed over and over again that it would be taken away. The failing eyesight, the stubborn disease, the temperamental weakness, whatever it was. And nothing happened. And since there was nothing, only silence, Paul had to interpret the nothingness and the silence, and he interpreted God as saying to him, "Sorry, Paul, you're stuck with this. You can get my work done in spite of it, and I'll be with you to help you, but the thorn stays." So what do we do with the three contradictory and partial truths we read this morning? We balance them against each other. We unravel their mystery. We try to resolve the tension they create by using our minds. And once we do that, we find ways to fulfill all three. Every person has to bear his own burden. True. As much as possible. Yet we are, as Christian people, to share those burdens insofar as we can. True. Does that include taking upon ourselves the burden of everybody else in the world? It isn't possible. I have an obligation to do something about the bird that flies into my glass door because it has flown within my orbit. It has become my neighbor. But I cannot be the catcher in the rye for every bird in the world. So to the person who asked the question, and to anyone who has managed a passing interest in it this morning, my answer is, never let anyone make you believe that reading the Bible, shot through as it is with hyperbole and wild poetry, is a simple matter. It takes the best you can give it. And I like believing that the people who make up this church respect and revere it enough to give it their best, to read it with an active imagination. Always imperative when you read the Bible or any literature. And finally, to revere it without idolatry.